Today I'd like us to take our Bibles and turn to the New Testament. And we're going to end up in the book of James, chapter 1, but initially we want to look at several passages of the New Testament. And I want to talk about our struggle with the flesh. If God has redeemed me, given me his Holy Spirit to live within me, then why do I go on sinning? Why do I go on struggling with sin? Has that situation ever frustrated you? Certainly has me. And it certainly did the Apostle Paul. Let's begin by taking our Bibles and looking at Romans 7. Romans 7. And I want to look at verses 15 through 21. In Romans 7:15, Paul says this: I do not understand what I do. For what I want to do, I do not do, but what I hate, I do. And if I do what I do not want to do, I agree that the law is good. As it is no longer I myself who do it, but it is sin living in me. I know that nothing good lives in me, that is, in my sinful nature, for I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. For what I do is not the good I want to do, no, the evil I do not want to do, this is what I keep on doing. Now, if I do what I do not want to do, it is no longer I who do it, but it is sin living in me that does it. So I find this law at work. When I want to do good, evil is right there with me. Now, look at his cry of despair. He's outlined his struggle with sin. Now, go on down to verse 24 and look at Paul's cry of despair. In verse 24, he says, "What a wretched man that I am. Who will rescue me from this body of death? What a wretched man that I am." I felt that way, and I'm sure you have. Now, Galatians 5, I want you to turn over there. You can put a ribbon in Romans 7 if you want, or a bulletin or something. But turn over to Galatians 5, because it describes the exact same battle with the flesh as a war between the flesh and the spirit. Galatians 5:16 and 17. And here's what it says. So I say, live by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the sinful nature. For the sinful nature desires what is contrary to the Spirit, and the Spirit what is contrary to the sinful nature. They are in conflict. Other excellent translations will say they are at war. They are at war. They are in conflict with each other so that you do not do what you want. So Paul says that even when I try to do good, sin's right there fighting against me. And in Romans 7, he uses the metaphor, the law of sin. Galatians 5 and Romans 7 teach the same thing. Galatians 5 teaches it theologically, and Romans 7 teaches it from the standpoint of Paul's personal practical experience. Now, Galatians 5 states the existence of the war, and Romans 7 uses a metaphor that explains the practical outworking of this conflict, this metaphor, law, the law of sin. Romans 7:25 says, in essence, the identical thing said in Galatians 5:17. It says there are two laws at work within us, the law of God and the law of sin. And that law metaphor, when it's called a law, Paul means for us to understand that sin is an indwelling force inside of us. It is a force that seeks to exercise power, authority. It seeks to constrain us. It seeks to exercise control over us. Now, the law of God is supposed to rule over the believer, isn't it? But if we are completely honest in head-to-head battles, the law of sin wins a whole lot more than we'd like it to. So consider this metaphor of law for a moment. Let's think about it. A law seeks to direct and command us to do what it requires or not to do what it forbids. It seeks to do this with promises of reward if we obey it, and threats of punishment if we don't. For example, let's take the fifth commandment, honor your father and your mother. Well, what's the reward stated in the text for doing that? Longer life. What's the implied punishment? Shorter life. So the law of sin generally seeks to convince us that there are things we must do or things we must have in order to be happy. That's the reward. And if we don't do these things or have these things, then we will be miserable. That's the punishment. Thus, the law of sin is a force within us that seeks to pressure us into obeying its will. G.K. Chesterton illustrated the problem in following this way. He says if a rhinoceros were to enter a restaurant right now, there would be no denying that it would have great power there. But I should be the first to rise and assure him that he had no authority there whatsoever. So if the law of sin in believers is like Chesterton's rhino, the only moral authoritative rule over believers is the kingdom and the reign of God. But indwelling sin is a bully. It's a bully that tries to usurp God's rule within us and have its way. And even though we rise and tell him he has no authority, he still tries to push us around the restaurant. Now, what's the point of attack of the law of sin? The Bible tells us it's our desires. The pleasures of sin are the rewards that it offers. And there is a rub, and the rub is that sin does gratify. Sin is pleasurable. Now, that brings us to the point of attack of the law of sin. And now is where I'd like you to turn in your Bibles to James chapter 1. James chapter 1, verses 14 and 15. What is the point of temptation? Well, let's look at James 1, 14. Each one is tempted when? By his own evil desire. he is dragged away and enticed. Again, other translations will say your own lusts. The NIV says your own evil desires. Now, that's what the word lust means. It means our desires. We are first enticed, okay? Deliazo in the Greek, it's a fishing term, refers to the bait that is used to lure the fish from out from under the log or out from under whatever place of safety that he's positioned himself in. Well, deliazo is the bait used to lure the fish out into the open and tempt him to come out there and be captured. Implied and enticed is the very important concept that all sin is based on deception. It is the supposed reward offered by the law of sin. The bait has to be something that appeals to our desires. You know, you can't give the same bait to every fish, can you? Different fish like different things, and they're enticed by different things. I mean, I'm such a great, highly experienced fisherman. I don't even like fish. But anyway, I know that from talking to people who do know, who do fish. Anyway, it has to be something attractive to our flesh. And as we dwell on the bait, our desire becomes so intense that we lose our caution and ignore the consequences of our actions. It looks attractive and pleasurable. Otherwise, sin would have no power to entice us. It was like, I don't care anything about that. I don't like that. I mean, there's going to be no temptation there. It's got to be something that appeals to our flesh. Attractive, pleasurable, otherwise no power to entice. No serious Christian gets up in the morning and consciously thinks, I just can't wait to rebel against God today. That's not how we function. Eve would never have considered disobeying God if she had not first been deceived. The point of the deception is our desires. And make no mistake about it, our desires are easily activated and easily led astray. Now notice the phrase, his own desires, his own lust. In other words, each person, as I've been saying, has his own set of desires. And another important aspect of that is it has to, we've said that whatever it is has to appeal to the flesh, but we also need to recognize what appeals to you won't necessarily appeal to me. What tempts you won't necessarily be a temptation to me. So temptation is very individually designed. Oh, there are some, like if you take men and then you take women, there are some things that just generally are going to appeal. But for the most part, temptation is something specifically designed to our flesh. There's a particular Achilles heel that we have that will tempt us. So when we are enticed by our desires, what happens? Well, just like a fish who chomps on the bait, only to find out after it is too late, there's a hook in there. And that fish is drawn away. In other words, when we give in to our desires, something very bad happens. We are hooked. Our desires compel us. They press us to follow temptation and sin, and we are captured and drawn away. And that's the results of giving in to the law of sin, destruction. Look at verse 15 of James 1. It says, then after desire has conceived, It gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. So conception takes place in our hearts. Sin always begins there. It always begins within. Eve did not fall when she ate the forbidden fruit. She'd already fallen. The sin had already been conceived in her heart. The fall had already occurred. Conception is something associated with life. We certainly know about it in terms of life and children being born and coming into this world. Pardon me for moving around so much here, but my leg is bothering me a little bit on this stool. There's nothing to be done about it. We're almost done. But anyway, conception is something associated with life. It's something associated with joy, but not here in James 1. When sin is conceived in the heart, the baby that is born is death and destruction. But be very clear on this, brothers and sisters. Sin is deceptive. It promises one thing and it gives something else. Something very different. Well, when a Christian begins to get into serious trouble, even begins to go a direction that can lead to addictive behavior and slavery, is when they stop trying to assert authority over the cross, or the authority of the cross, I should say, over sin, and they instead try to make peace with the rhino. And by that I mean we become so committed to giving in to our desires that we buy into the deception of sin and we convince ourselves that there just isn't any hook in that bait. Nothing there but a good meal. You wouldn't believe that. Or you wouldn't believe, some of the excuses that I've heard people make for sin or for things the Bible blatantly calls sin through the years. It's incredible how people can talk themselves, how Christians can talk themselves into sin. Well, you don't find yourself dodging the rhino's horn day and night in a struggle against sin, and maybe you've made peace with the rhino. You've made peace with your desires. You are willingly, happily under its power and under its rule. And in that case, you should doubt, seriously examine whether you're truly a born-again Christian if you've just given in to desires. Because 1 John 3:9 says, no one who is born of God can live at peace with sin. Yes, we're all going to struggle with sin. But true Christians engage in the struggle. They engage in the battle. They don't just give in to the rhino. So I appeal to you today, for the sake of your soul, run to Christ. Run to Christ. Examine the desires that enslave you, because only Jesus can deliver you from the rhino.